Good morning. We want to welcome each one of you to our Mission Sunday. I've chosen to read this morning from Matthew chapter 25, starting at verses 34. Matthew 25, verse 34. Just a quick note, there is no Sunday school classes in the basement. Everybody will stay in the main auditorium for the Sunday school hour. Reading from Matthew chapter 25, verse 34. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee, and hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee in a prison, and came unto thee? And the king answered and said unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee in hunger, and a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not unto me. And these shall go away into the everlasting punishment, but the righteous into everlasting life, or eternal life. These thoughts have been on my mind quite a bit this week. The least of these, my brethren. It just reminds me that whatever situation God puts us in, no matter what the circumstance, we are to show the mercy and love of Christ as he showed unto us. Let's bow before the Lord in prayer. So this being our Mission Sunday, like was mentioned, all Sunday school classes will stay in the main auditorium. We have three speakers, three brethren here this morning that are going to give us their testimony and their experiences as they experienced in times past here recently on the mission field. We have Eric Newcomer, Alex Newcomer, and Greg Mummert. I'm not sure what order they're going to be in, but we turn the service over to these brethren.
Morning. When Lester asked me to do this, I told him absolutely not, I won't do it. I don't want to stand in front of the whole church, plus all the visitors. He goes, oh, that's fine, I'll just come back next week and I'll ask you again. I'm like, that's perfectly fine, I'll tell you now. So he came back next week and I said, yes, I don't know why I did that, but he told me to share my experience on what we did and how I was blessed and how I believe we blessed others. So I asked Dad, how should I present this and how should I go about it? And he goes, well, I'll just be a salesman, sell it to him. And if you're not good enough at it, well, just leave it up to the next salesman. So I guess I'll try doing that. I would love to say I have pictures and literature on what we did and to sell it to you like a salesman. But if I did that, it'd look like we just goofed off the whole time. So my first trip with Cam was to Kentucky in 23. We went down to rebuild after the tornadoes, and there was a lot of houses down there that were destroyed, and when you get down there, you see that everything they had was just leveled to the floor. It's gone. Their whole life was in their house, was there on their property, and it's no longer there for them. They have nothing to come home to after they come back from where they fled to, and everything we have, just think how blessed we are for having that. And to see how grateful they were when we were there to help rebuild and how blessed they were to have us, the only shining light in the world at that point, to help them get back a little bit of something they had. And then the second trip I took was to Texas in 25, it'd be February, I believe. We went down there, and the trip down there, that was a long drive. We went down with Eric Lockman. You may look at the guy and think, oh, you're not going to have fun with him. He, you know, suspenders, parted hair through the center. It's like, yeah, that's not going to be a blast. He's going to be a buzzkill. Well, looking at him, you would be completely wrong. You look at him, and he is a blast. And you think you're going to out-joke him and maybe outwit him a little bit, and you would be wrong. He has about 40 years on you of all the old jokes and knowledge of all that. So the drive down there with, it was Alex, Zane, and Mikhail, and Eric. That truck ride was quite enjoyable. That was a very long drive, though. We went down to rebuild after the fires happened. Get down there, and I knew what I was in for this time, I guess, because I've been down there once, or been to one of Cam's trips before. So get down there, set up our bunks, and get to meet the crew we're on. The group of guys was from all over the place, Indiana, Ohio, a couple other places, some from hometown. But you get to meet guys that are from different backgrounds, different groups of sorts, and you learn real quick that you get to work together with them, and it's enjoyable to meet new people, have new experiences, and work with them on a crew that none of you know what you're doing. You're there to help rebuild, your crew leader's there, and if you screw it up, don't worry about it. He'll come and he'll tell you that you did it wrong, make you tear it out and do it over again. So you'll learn to do it right the first time or get to do it a second time. But we got to go down there, and the houses were pretty much done at that point. We just did siding, interior work, and painting of sorts. So I learned how to spill paint all over myself and get some on the house in the process. And a couple of the guys that were there, they told me, oh, that's perfectly fine. If you just get it all over, you just use yourself as a brush. So after doing that, and we learned how to work together and be as a crew, which after about 2 days, you learn how each other are. You learn each other's humor and everything else and get to work together. And then you get to meet the homeowners that are crew I was on, the place we were helping rebuild at, they were living in a shed at this point, and it was a year to the day when we were down there that they were living in the shed of a, it's just a ooping hoop shed. The one end was completely open. The other end was partially closed in. They were living in there with space heaters, and it was getting down to 2 degrees at night, some nights. And they were just so happy to have somewhere that was out of the weather to stay. And I had to think, would I be that grateful for just something to stay in if I lost everything? We're there and talking to the lady, and she's, oh yeah, the Lord has blessed us to give you guys to help us rebuild our life. And I had to think, well, would I be that, would I have that outlook on it, or would I be more just, I lost everything. Why is God doing this to me? But after talking to her and seeing her outlook on it, and they were showing us around, they had a huge collection of old cars there, and all of them that were burnt, and some of them that they ended up saving by moving to the side. They showed us one, the engine block was, it's an aluminum engine block on this car. It completely melted it. There's nothing left. The only thing that was left was a cam and crank and a couple valve springs. It just, that hot, it melted everything. It's gone. So we're there helping rebuild, and they're like, yeah, we may have lost this, but look what we still have. We still have our pets. We still have each other. So that's something I had to think about. Well, how would I look at it? But then we got to go to a house dedication to another couple that had a place there that he lost everything, and that was his response too. The Lord has blessed us. We still have each other. He said, and thank God for you guys to come down and take time out of your busy schedule to do this. I didn't understand it at the time of how much it was. I went down just to have fun with my friends and maybe do a little something, see the world a little more. But after going down and getting to meet them and put a face with the disaster that happened, it puts a whole new outlook on it. And then you get to work with the guys that you would have never met before, that you may look at them and be like, well, they're not going to be fun, or they might be interesting people. Well, after you get to meet them, you learn that they have a better sense of humor than you do sometimes. And some of them are a lot stronger than you are, apparently. Because you put a bunch of guys in a room together, it's bound to one of them's going to say, well, I'll fight you. And then before you know it, there's a bunch of us on the floor rolling around. And somebody's bound to end up pinned down. Unfortunately, that was me at this time. But you go and go down there, you get to, living quarters were pretty decent. I mean, it smelled like a bunch of sweaty men, but other than that, it was fine. And the cooks that went down, I mean, they made good enough food for you. You could definitely survive on that and put on a few pounds. So if you're worried about going and maybe not being able to survive off the food or be able to do the job because you don't know anything about construction. I'm a mechanic. I don't know anything about construction. I went down and winged it, and the crew leader's there to help you out. If you need help, they'll help you. If you don't know what you're doing, that's fine. There's always somebody there that don't know what they're doing, and they're willing to help too. But the job trailer they have is completely stocked with all your tools that you would need in the latest and greatest in DeWalt, so you don't work with junk. That's always nice. You get to use all their tools. And then when we were down there working, they're like, oh, we get a nice break here, about an hour for lunch. Well, I'm not 100% used to that on the farm. If you go and you get to wolf your sandwich down as fast as you get at 8, you get back to work. So we're like, okay, well, let's go sightseeing while we're down here. We go around sightseeing, get to see one of the biggest lakes and beautiful things, and seen a roadrunner and a couple other things. It's very surprising, all the things that are completely different from what I'm used to and from around here. You see that, it opens your eyes up to how beautiful it is, what God created. And the people that see it every day don't maybe appreciate it quite as much. But yeah, you go and go on one of these trips. There's devotions every morning. You get to see the scripture from another person's perspective than you would normally look at it. The just normal guys like you and me that would go down and work on this. And then you meet the homeowners that they maybe aren't as plain as we are. They don't see the world as we do. But yet they're still praising the Lord and thanking the Lord for what they do have and what they didn't get taken from them. It's very much a blessing to see this. I got to talk to one of the old guys. He was in the military, and he was discussing what he did and what he didn't do and how hard it was to get a job after he got back and how hard it was to build everything he had. And then everything that he did have got taken. And he said, praise the Lord that you are here to help rebuild, and Cam's here to help build this back for me that I can't afford on my retirement salary, and I can't afford to go and build back anything at all. The insurance don't want to cover it. He don't have the money. He said, and Cam's here to help. And I didn't realize how much of a blessing it was for us to go and be able to help, that we have enough that we can take a week and just go, drop everything and do it. But you go down and do that, it's like, wow, I did not realize how blessed we were, how much we have, how much we take for granted, that it's perfectly fine. We have it. It'll be here tomorrow if we don't get it done. Well, they got everything taken. It ain't gonna be there. But it is a blast if you do go. The trip down was definitely the longest. The trip there was the longest. That was terrible. It's sitting in a truck that long. You learn things about each other you didn't know. Alex can sleep in very weird positions. I did not realize that until this trip. And Zane is definitely a cuddler. But you don't know these things till you go on a trip. And you learn things, and your relationship is definitely growing stronger through that. And it will be fun. And if it's not, well, try again next year and see if it isn't better. But if I didn't do a good enough job selling it, maybe Alex or Eric can. And if they can't, well, maybe see another salesman and see if he's better. Thank you.
All right, well, good morning. So last August, end of August, beginning of September, I left for Maine to serve for a year, so that's what I'll be talking about this morning. And that is through Engage 207, which most of you are probably familiar with that. So there was two main spots that I served at, the BME and the Root Cellar. When I got up there, the BME was just got bought. So I got to help fix that up. That was sort of neat to see that. It wasn't open when I first got there. So then we redid the walls, insulation, pulled a lot out, redid the ceiling. We got a scissors lift in, replaced all that. Did some painting on the outside. Organizing all sorts of stuff to get it open to the public. So the BME would stand for Building Materials Exchange. So basically, people can bring in building stuff that they don't need. Harvey Window is a big one. They are huge. I don't know if they're probably mostly around the U.S. But so if they have an order that's messed up, they stack their windows to the side, and it piles up, so then they call somebody like us. We'll come pick them up, and then people can come look through them and see if they can find something they can need for less of a price. They called it The Last Sheaf. Sort of the idea was the story of Ruth and Boaz, where Boaz, I think, told his reapers to leave some in the field for the needy and the widows and the people that come behind. So the idea was sort of for that. Pretty well has most anything or not. Yeah. The selection is interesting. It's lumber's not really there because it doesn't really get repurposed for the most part, but yeah, doors, windows, paint, nails, hardware, screws, a little bit, some tools, electrical, plumbing, so they pretty well have it all. That was more of just a go there and put energy and effort, but not as much of a, it was different than the Root Cellar. Oh, yeah, I'll get to that later. But it was more of just like a put physical effort in. So that was good that you could, good place to go and just work, put in good hard work. The Root Cellar is right there in downtown Lewiston where I was living. And they have a lot going on. It's a fairly big building, but they use about all of it. So the one major thing they have is English classes. Lewiston has a lot of immigrants, a lot of people coming in from all over. A lot of Africa, a few South America. They have English classes. I didn't get to help a lot with that. I helped a little bit. So they have all the way from people who can't speak anything to people that are getting up to speak and you can understand and hold a conversation. And I think at one point during my year, I think they had around 300 English students coming in through 1 week, so they have a lot of people. The other sort of outreach, I guess, they have would be the cafe. Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday morning, they have you can come and get a free sandwich and a free coffee or coffee drink. And that, especially in the cold mornings, that really draws in a lot. There's a lot of a homeless crowd around Lewiston, so you see a fair amount of them come in. And then just the community around the root cellar comes in, and it's sort of neat to talk to the homeless crowd. It seems like you sort of get the same story from all of them. Like, at one point in their prime, they were making a lot of money, they were in a good spot, and then they had a setback from this or that. Talked to one guy who was in a wheelchair. He was drywalling houses. He told me he made, I think, $250,000 in a year. He was really making money. He was really doing good. And then he fell down a flight of stairs on stilts and messed up his brain. His one arm was messed up, and he could move his legs a little bit, but he was sort of done. So it's, depressing maybe to talk to him, because their marijuana or weed is legalized more in Maine, so basically for them it's more weed, more cigarettes. Like, it's really depressing. Just that life without Jesus. There's no, it's just, live for today and move on, I guess. So that was where I talked to, I guess, most of the homeless people there at Cafe. The thing I helped out with most of the root cellar would have been the after-school programming. So they pick up first through fifth or sixth graders from school, take them back to the root cellar, and then you have them for 2 hours, and they do all sorts of stuff. They have normally the first hour outside or inside playing games, riding bikes, scooters, soccer, basketball, anything to run some energy off. I'll have to say soccer was one of my favorites, and played a lot of soccer that year with the children. That was really fun. Good way to connect with them. So then the second hour, they come inside, sit around a table normally, have a Bible story, have a snack, and then a craft, maybe some Bible memorization. And then they had a system where if the children were safe enough, they obeyed, they could go on a field trip on Thursday. So it sort of encouraged good behavior. And so then the field trips might include swimming or going to a park. Sometimes they'd take them out to a farm, see some animals. That was really neat for them, because to me that was normal. Just goats, cats, dogs, whatever, that's normal. But to them, they had never seen that stuff before, so that was really exciting to them, so that was sort of neat. Take them on some hikes. And then through the summer, instead of after school, they had something they call Super Summer. So then we have the children for 4 hours, Monday through Thursday. And they do sort of the same idea, more engaged. They have a system set up where it's two teams, so you can earn points for your team. So that's a different ways you can do that is, good behavior, learning Bible verses, which is great. So they can, earn points through a lot of that stuff. So I got to help, with all that. And then Friday, so that was 4 hours, Monday through Thursday for Super Summer. And then Friday they have a lot of teens working at the root cellar from there around Lewiston, high school age. And so then they're helping out with the after school and the Super Summer. And then Friday is sort of like their family day, they call it, with the root cellar. And have some team games, maybe a field trip. They have a couple camping trips out into an island at one point, and just around. And there again, they're almost never out of the city, so that's really interesting. Their normal is in the city, whereas my normal is out in the country. Yeah, so I also really enjoyed playing basketball with the teens. That was a favorite. There's a lot of good guys there. And it was sort of like the root cellar was like a first job opportunity. I don't think they made a lot of money, but they learned a lot of things in life that would help them out. Yeah. Some of them were Christians, some were not. There was a few converts while I was there, so that was neat. A few are really on fire for the Lord, which I guess sort of challenged me, because here they are that don't know near as much about the Bible as me, but they're all in and they're ready to go for it. So I guess some of how it changed me, I think it might be a little, maybe not, but it seems sometimes like it's easier to serve when you're there 100%. Like I was, when we get into our daily lives around here, you do your 40 or 50 hour week and have a couple other hobbies that you do, and you don't really have much time to serve maybe. But when you're up there full time, it's a different angle and it's more fulfilling, I guess. And just seeing what normal life was for a lot of those refugees and people, especially the children. You know, some of the behavior was really bad, swearing and throwing punches. And then just seeing some what their home life was. You know, the broken homes, fathers and in and out. I got into a few apartments different times and were smaller and just not quite as clean, but maybe that's just what they're used to. But yeah, it was, I guess, from our perspective, you see the immigrants coming in. And I guess it sort of changed my, I don't know exactly how I thought about it before, but I think like the American perspective, especially with Trump getting in, you know, send the immigrants back. They don't belong here. And you see that from the other side. You hear the political side or whatever it is that, you know, that they're murderers, they run drugs, whatever. And I'm sure that happens. But there's a lot of people just looking for a better place to live, too. So I guess I was challenged by that to, you know, love your neighbor. Why do we belong here and they don't? I didn't do much to belong here. So, yeah, I'd say that changed my perspective a lot on that. And just, yeah, having friends. I don't know that any are directly in that, but there's a few people I think I know that knew people that got sent back. And yeah, back to countries that are wars fighting, you know. So, yeah, it was really good to serve there. Learned a lot about, how we believe. How do I want to say this? Maybe their Christianity looks a little different than us, but we're all headed for the same goal. So I guess you can, try to help them learn in that. Maybe some areas that they might be a little off on, but at least they're on fire and they're learning, and that's really neat to see. I think that's all I have. Does anybody have any questions? All right, I guess not. I guess I'll turn it over to Eric. Thank you.
I would say good morning as well. I'm excited that the younger generation is getting involved in stuff like this. I don't know that I maybe did that so much at their age, but that's encouraging to see younger people getting involved. I asked them before we walked in if I would slip in with the young people, if anybody would notice, and maybe you did. You don't have to tell me. What I experienced was in September 24 when Hurricane Helene came through, and it came up through the mountains down there in North Carolina and Tennessee. That's what I'm going to be talking about a little bit today. And I was not involved in setting this trip up at all. I had a friend, his name was Ryan, and met him at our cafe, and he actually has a campground. But anyhow, he called me, and this was maybe 3 or 4 days after the flooding in had come through there in North Carolina. And he said, hey, he goes, we got a bunch of people bringing us donations, and we're looking for an enclosed trailer, and I knew you had one. And he said, so I have two questions. One would be, can I use your trailer? And two, would you go along? And this is where I made a mistake. I was like, well, sure, you can use my trailer. But this week, that week that you're going, which would have been the next week, it was like 2 day notice. I said, I got so much going. I said, I don't know that I can go, but I can give you some gas money or whatever. And I think, sadly, that was actually an excuse, throwing some gas money at him. And he was like, okay, well, we'll use the trailer or whatnot. And I hung up, and instantly my conscience started working on me. And I thought, wow, is that the best I can do? Let somebody else use my trailer and then just go on with life, you know, what I think's important here. So I called my wife and talked to her, and she said, well, I think you should go, and I did too. So I called him back in probably less than 10 minutes, and I said, hey, I'm going. What do we need to do? So they were collecting their donations down there. It's Island Campground, and so like under a bridge. So they were having everybody drop everything under this bridge, so just in case it rained. So we had about maybe a day and a half to get ready. So I took my trailer down and I pulled in. And when I pulled in, the amount of donations there was just overwhelming. And we both looked at my trailer and we're like, this isn't going to work. So my trailer got parked off to the side, which is, it's just like a 14 footer. And he had a relative that had, I believe it was around either a 26 or a 30 foot enclosed trailer, and said we could use it. So we, the night before, started loading that trailer, packed it full, and then filled my trailer with, almost completely filled my trailer with dog food that we couldn't get on the first load, which just brought up another point. I learned my way isn't always the best. We were there trying to decide what to take. We couldn't take everything, and we were looking over everything. There's a lot of, you know, water, food, all kinds of like just non-perishable food items. And then we had these just piles of dog food. And I piped up and gave my opinion. I was like, well, let's let all the dog food home, because let's take all the food for the people. Let's take care of the people first. And the one guy just cut me off and he said, you don't want to do that. He said, we have a contact down there, and said, be sure to bring dog food and cat food. Because he said, if you don't, the people will feed their dogs and their cats the people food. So I would have never thought about that. And I have another story about that as we get a little bit further on. So our goal was to take as much of the humanitarian aid as possible, as well as help in any search and rescue that we could get involved in. We both, in our minds, thought that we would take our chainsaws and packs, and we thought we were going to be like blazing trails through the mountains and handing water bottles out. That's kind of like what we thought we were going to do. I got ahead on my notes here. So when we were heading down, we didn't know exactly where we were going to go. We were just headed for the area we knew was the hardest hit. And then on the way, he was on the phone with different people, and we soon realized that we couldn't just pull a trailer full right into a devastated area like that, because of the looting, and just because of no organization. It just was not the way we thought it would be. You know, it's not like you park your trailer and people just line up and come by and you hand them stuff. A lot of the hardest hit areas, there was still people there, but the people that actually needed the stuff was the people that were not in the hardest hit areas. They may have been just outside of that, where all the trees were down and you couldn't get to them. So we ended up finding a church that was about an hour away, and it was actually in Tennessee, and they were taking donations. And then from there, they were like making up these packs, and they were actually flying them in with helicopters and dropping them, because Even up to like 2 weeks later, they weren't getting to the people up in the mountains. So the neat thing was, it was amazing how this church organized this so quickly. They first started taking donations at their church, and it spread into their parking lot. And within 2 days, they had rented a big like commercial warehouse that had been empty. And they set this up as a drop-off point, and we got there, and it was just trucks and trailers lined up. Stuff, you know, I saw license plates from all over the United States, stuff from Texas, and they were lining them up, and the warehouse was big enough, they were actually pulling the trucks inside, and the people were just, the volunteers were just unloading it, and they were actually like inventorying everything. And some of what we did that day to help was like, a lot of, when people donate, they were bringing like, you know, small grocery bags or whatever. So we were organizing the stuff and shrink wrapping it on skids. And then like they had sections, you know, for pets, for babies, water, different things like that. So when we got there, we could not get unloaded right away. It was toward the end of the day. In fact, it was almost dark and they were wanting to go home and get some sleep. So we ended up parking the trailer and we went back to a church. They gave us directions, and it was kind of interesting. Everybody there was being pulled in different directions. So you would get a little information from somebody and they're like, yeah, go back to this church and they'll have a place for you to sleep. Well, we got there and there was like nobody there. And there was like vehicles and tents sitting everywhere. Just a lot of stuff from volunteers. There was a makeshift helicopter pad there that they were actually flying missions out from that church. So we got there late. I think most of the people were already sleeping, and there was a few sheds, and somebody said, you know, you could sleep in this shed. It was kind of like a big garden shed that would be in your backyard. There was four of us. I didn't mention that at the beginning, but it was myself and Ryan, and then his son, who I believe was 12, and then his friend. So that we had two like 12 or 13-year-old boys along. So the three of them slept in the shed. I decided to sleep outside with my sleeping bag because I have heard that when I'm sleeping soundly, no one else is. So I slept outside, and I did not sleep much that night. I think just being in that atmosphere, knowing what had just happened there, and there was helicopters flying all night long with like the searchlights, and I guess they were, I don't know exactly what they were doing. I'm assuming at that point they may have been looking for people. I'm not sure. But between that and the dogs barking the whole night, I didn't sleep much. But anyhow, that was fine. So we got up the next morning, went back, hooked up the trailer, and we were going to unload at this church. And right about the time we were about to back in, this lady came in, and she was kind of frantic, and she asked the one organizer there, she goes, is there any way we can get supplies? And she ran a local like foundation that's open year round, and it's for local needy people, homeless people, and they have all kinds of basically humanitarian aid, and there's a lot of people in that area. And this was in Tennessee, about an hour away from, you know, the worst hit part. There's a lot of people that rely on that. And she said that when this had happened, all of their stuff was snatched up by people that were trying to get into the flood areas. Anyhow, I'm going to have to speed up. So we ended up hooking up the trailer and going there, and it was an old like bank, just like that they had transferred into, you know, this building. We backed up there, and I would say 80% of everything we had got stacked in that building. And the neat thing about that was, is we got to fulfill an immediate need. So it's not like the stuff was just in the warehouse. It went into an empty building and people were like immediately needing it. So that was pretty neat. I'm actually going to skip some notes and try to hit the important stuff. So then after we unloaded everything, we headed to Swannanoa and Black Mountain, and they were the hardest hit areas. That's where we really wanted to get. Black Mountain, I believe that one night had received 21 inches of rain, and 21 inches of rain coming off the mountains. I believe I heard numbers something like 15 to 20 foot above flood stage, which completely covered the valleys. and some cases completely covered the houses. We talked to a local person there. Now, we're about a week after this happened, and one of the local volunteers told us not to open any vehicles that would have been laying on the roofs or whatever with a red X painted on them, or any houses with red X's on them would have had bodies in them still that were not recovered yet. After the bodies were recovered, they would spray paint a red circle around the X, and that meant that was completed, you know, that. So that was probably some of the saddest stuff that I've seen. Was in one particular time, we were driving down along where the river was, and there was like a development, and you could see where the water line was actually up on the shingles on a lot of the single story houses. And the one house particular I looked at, and there was three red X's on that house, and that hit home pretty hard. Vehicles had been caught in the flash flood. I guess the flooding, from what we heard from some of the locals, they knew everything was flooding. The water was coming up, but I don't think any of them realized how high it was going to get. So a lot of them didn't leave. And so there would have been vehicles just like along the roads, maybe rolled up against buildings or against trees that may have been coming back through, maybe driving through some flood water. It's kind of hard to tell, but in that, that would have been in the Swannanoa Valley there by the river. That was where we saw the worst, as far as where the loss of life was the greatest. The day that we had left, jumping ahead, there was search teams there. It was organized through, I believe it was called Baptist something mission. I forget what it was. We ended up joining them just because we realized that just the four of us really couldn't have an impact. They had a giant setup. And when I say set up, like they had bathrooms, showers, they had food trucks, and they also had organization where they took all our information, and we actually would get worksheets with addresses, and they would send us out to a certain address and be like, okay, when you get there, this is what we want you to do. So we ended up joining them, but they also had search and recovery crews. And it was the day before we left, I guess, they had said that they had found with dogs and drones like 100 bodies or remains in about a 2 to 3 mile stretch below Swannanoa. And then what they would do, they would mark that stuff, and then they would have crews that would come in and recover after that. So I'm going to jump ahead again. There's so much we could share that's packed into those 4 days. I'm not going to get to anything that we actually, any of the relief work we actually got to do, but I want to get ahead to what I learned. The one thing I wanted to share, the reason I did share some of the more of the graphic, what we did see, is I think it is important to know when you go into mission work, you're not, like, we weren't quite sure what we were going to experience, but being we had young people with us, they would not allow us to get in on any of the recovery or go into any of the areas that were not yet searched. So you have to kind of, you know, be careful. That work will go on for years, so it's not like you have to be a first responder. The organization we were with, the houses we worked on, they said every house they work on, they will come back, and if the insurance companies don't cover that, they will absolutely finish that house completely, even if the insurance companies don't get involved. So quickly wrapping it up, what I learned, I wasn't willing to go initially. And 1 John 3:17, but whoso hath this world's goods and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. But indeed there, that tells me that we are called to action. In Luke 10:29, the parable Jesus told of the Good Samaritan, someone asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? And Jesus told that whole story of the parable. And then at the end, he re-asked that man that question. He said, who was the neighbor? And they said, he that showed mercy on him. And then Jesus said unto him, go and do thou likewise. That's a command, and I just realized that my one brother was telling me one time how his job, he's on call. So every so many weekends, if there's a need or an emergency, he has to go. And so he sort of has to plan his schedule around that. And I thought, we as Christians, I believe we need to be on call. We might not be called into the mission field full time, but I believe we need to be on call so that when the call comes, that we're mentally prepared and willing to go when the need is there. Sorry, I went a little over, but thank you.